All right, everybody, welcome back to the Honors Element. It's Ben Lear here, and we're closing out this exam leg with something that can really tie a lot of threads together, phase transitions. You know, those moments when ice melts, water boils, or even when dry ice mysteriously vanishes into thin air. We're going to get a grip on what's really happening at the molecular level during these big changes.
It's a perfect topic for wrapping up, because phase transitions connect so many ideas from our course. There are really six basic ones, right? Melting, freezing, evaporating, condensing, sublimation, and deposition. And every time you see a block of ice start to sweat on a warm day, you're watching one of those transitions happen in real time.
Exactly. So let's run through them quick. Melting is solid to liquid, freezing is liquid to solid, evaporation is liquid to gas, and condensation is gas to liquid. Those are the ones we are taught from a young age. Now, for the ones you don't usually hear about until college, sublimation is solid directly to gas, think dry ice or freezer-burned peas, and deposition is where a vapor skips the liquid and settles straight to solid, like frost forming on your car windshield overnight.
All of this is great, but what actually controls which phase we're in or when we jump from one to another? This is where temperature, pressure, and those ever-present intermolecular forces come in. If you heat up an ice cube, you're adding energy to the water molecules. Once you hit that melting point, the molecules have enough energy to break free from the rigid solid structure and start flowing.
And pressure plays a more subtle role than a lot of folks realize. Think about that example from the last episode where we talked about water boiling in the mountains versus at sea level. The lower atmospheric pressure high up actually lowers the temperature where water boils. So you can make your coffee at a simmer below 100 degrees Celsius in Colorado. On the other hand, a pressure cooker cranks the pressure up, and suddenly that water doesn't boil until it's reached a much higher temp, makes cooking beans so much faster. Trust me.
That pressure effect comes up all the time, especially in labs or in food science, which, let's be honest, is where I first started caring about this stuff. I mean, vacuum-sealed foods, freeze-dried coffee, those depend on controlling phase transitions by tweaking temperature and pressure, not just holding your thumb over a boiling pot and hoping for the best.
What is really neat is that if we push or pull at the right combination of temperature and pressure, we can get two phases coexisting in equilibrium. You ever look into a melting ice cube and notice there's a sort of balance of solid and liquid, both hanging out together? That's not a static thing. Molecules are constantly leaving and joining each phase. Really, our path across the temperature and pressure landscape is what decides whether your glass contains ice, water, or just steam.
So, if temperature and pressure are the drivers, how do you visualize all these changes? Enter the phase diagram, a chemist's GPS for the states of matter. It's basically a graph with pressure on the y-axis, temperature on the x-axis, and the different phases drawn out in regions. The lines between the regions mark where phases coexist. There is a melting line, a vaporization line, and a sublimation line.
Yeah, and if you've ever felt lost staring at those squiggly lines, you're not alone. But there's some real power in those diagrams, so let's break it down. You've got regions where only one phase is stable, either solid, liquid, or gas. Then you've got curves, like the solid-liquid line, which show where two phases can coexist, right at the intersection of all three regions. That's the triple point, the unicorn of chemistry. All three phases living in harmony, but only at this very specific combo of pressure and temperature.
And at the other end of the solid-liquid line, you have the critical point. Go past that, and you get a supercritical fluid. No true liquid, no true gas, just a weird phase blending the two. So it isn't a mixture of the two phases. It is a whole other phase that just has the properties of both the gas and liquid.
Let's talk about water versus carbon dioxide. For most substances, their solid-liquid line, which is the melting curve, leans rightward, meaning the solid is denser than the liquid. When you increase pressure, you make the solid more likely to form. But water flips the script. Its line tilts to the left because ice is less dense than liquid water. You can actually melt ice by pushing down on it, and that's why ice skating works. Your blade increases the pressure, the ice melts a bit, and you glide along.
And for carbon dioxide, things get even stranger. Carbon dioxide's triple point sits above 1 atm, so at regular atmospheric pressure, you never actually get liquid carbon dioxide. It goes straight from solid to gas, which is why dry ice doesn't melt. It sublimes. That's actually the principle behind how freeze-dried foods are made. The solid water in them sublimes away in a vacuum, and poof, light, shelf-stable snacks forever.
All told, those phase diagrams are more than just abstract curves. They help you predict and explain real-life behaviors, from why ice floats to how you can crank out instant coffee that won't spoil. Frankly, you won't look at a cup of ice water or a chunk of dry ice the same way again.
As fun as the basic phase transitions are, things get really interesting with phenomena like supercooling and superheating. So, imagine water that stays liquid even below its normal freezing point, just waiting for the tiniest nudge to crystallize into ice. That's supercooling. And I know I'm not the only one who's heard tales of microwaving water, and it doesn't boil until suddenly, kaboom, boil over city. That's superheating. Heating water in a very clean mug in the microwave can take it above 100 degrees, and all it needs is a little jostle or coffee stir for it to boil violently. It's one of those don't try this at home situations.
That's why in lab we always toss in boiling chips when heating liquids. They give bubbles a place to form gently so things don't get out of hand. But back to phase diagrams for a sec. What about those weird cases where substances skip the liquid phase altogether? Like dry ice at room pressure. Looking at carbon dioxide's phase diagram, you'll see that at 1 atm, it sublimes at around 78.5 degrees. That's why you see it disappear as those foggy clouds.
And that fog? Just regular water vapor from the air condensing. Carbon dioxide itself is invisible. Freeze-drying works on the same principle. You freeze the food, lower the pressure, and then the frozen water sublimates. None of that energy-wasting melting. It's such a cool application of phase transitions, and I mean, who doesn't love astronaut ice cream?
And that triple point, so neat, but for carbon dioxide, it's above normal air pressure, so you'll never see liquid carbon dioxide in your kitchen. You'd need specialized equipment. And just to tease what's ahead, some substances like carbon or tin have multiple solid phases or different forms that depend on pressure and temperature, like diamond and graphite. Totally different, yet both are just solid carbon. That kind of phase behavior is what takes us from basic changes in water to more complex ideas in materials chemistry.
And these are exactly the demonstrations you'll see in class. We'll be showing you the triple point of carbon dioxide. There's a lot more to explore, but for exam season, I'm going to call it here.
All right, that's a wrap for this session. As always, keep your curiosity tuned up, and remember, understanding phases is key to chemistry and a whole lot more. Thanks for exploring with us, Morgan.
Thank you, Ben. And thanks to everyone listening. Good luck prepping for your exams. We'll be back with new themes soon. Catch you later.